Oh, get started? Yep. Mic's on and everything like that? Yep, cool. All right, cool. Thanks, guys, for coming. The discussion today is going to be around Azure and Docker, particularly looking at some of the stuff that we do with shipping open source projects into containers and into the cloud. Hopefully, everyone's in the right room. If I sound a little bit rough, we were up way too late last night. No, just kidding. So basically, what we're trying to look at as well is the Azure Container Service. Interestingly enough, we're going to be giving a quick overview of that service, but we are not going to log into the Azure portal once. Basically, we're doing everything in pure sort of like, you know, open source and geek mode. We're all done from command line and other services and tools. So you won't get to see too many pretty pictures. And basically, a few questions around, does everything sort of fit into Docker? Mostly. We get asked a lot these days around whether or not Docker and containers in general are ready for production. All of our clients that we have today have got production containers out there in one way, shape, or form. So not everything goes in there. For instance, things like SAP, you can try. Someone's done it before. But also things as well as the schedulers that are there. So we do have things like, obviously, Kubernetes, DCOS, there's a Swarm, quite a few different ones. Chris and I actually have a different take on these, so you'll get to see more than one today on that. But we can take a look through that. Continuous integration and delivery and CI/CD. In general, we'll be looking at not just CI/CD, but just automation as well, and how some of these components can actually help us get the services that we are running potentially on-prem into the cloud using containers. And then customers open source challenge. So we'll be walking through. We had, probably the right way to say it, we had a government-like client who basically came to us with a problem saying, I'm running all these things on-prem. We'll talk a little bit about the challenges there, but ultimately we'll be able to pick the entire lot up, and we'll show you that today, and move it all into containers. So it's pretty fun. And yeah, you see at the bottom now, there's some Terraform infrastructure as code. Again, not doing things the conventional way. We'd like to do things a little bit differently, purely for these demonstrations. But we'll be showing you how we manage the infrastructure that way. Should have actually talked about us, the company. So we're Vibrato. We've been telling everybody it's 1R. You can take what you want from that. But basically, Vibrato is all about automation. We're very much around looking at DevOps and also just streamlining the development and delivery processes for customers when they look at application development, even off-the-shelf products. Cloud experts, so not just in the Azure space. We obviously look at AWS, Google, GCE, things like that as well. We say public and private, but these days it's more so looking at all the public cloud stuff that's out there. Chef and HashiCorp, so we're the number one partners for Chef and HashiCorp here in Australia. Chef's actually out in the exhibit lounge, so please go and have a chat to them as well. But we do a lot in that space, and we'll be demoing probably a little bit more in this one around the HashiCorp space. Me, again, how big is it? Every time I see it, how big is that photo? I needed to fix the slides. That's the worst picture ever. Post-technical Pete, that's me. Only today I am actually on the tech, so this is going to be hilarious. I've got something that I prepared earlier, so I will be doing a few things and probably breaking it, but we like to do that as well when we present. But yep, I'm actually the CEO of Vibrato, and there's also a company called Harbor that I'm an owner of, and it's about a visualization product for the cloud environments that are out there. We mentioned that because in a couple of weeks we'll be releasing the capability for Azure environments to be visualized as well. You got Chris? Hey, Chris. So Chris is one of our senior automation engineers at Vibrato. So Chris built a lot in this presentation. He's built a lot of stuff in the back end around the Terraform and showing some of the ways that we've done that. Again, his picture's probably a little bit nicer than mine. It looks really cool. That was in a pub. But basically, the real thing being is that if you've got questions later on, either at the back end of this, or you want to come and see us afterwards or at any point, Chris is definitely the technical person to speak to. Okay. All right. Has everyone used containers before? Okay, I was going to say for a 400 session, don't you put your hand up. So for a 400 session, that's okay because I'm going to be showing you a little bit from scratch, exactly the same sort of journey that we went on with the client, but we'll get into it. So container management service, so Azure's obviously got a few different types and ways of doing the orchestration, so it supports doing DCOS, Docker Swarm, and Kubernetes. You get to see two of those today in this presentation. And yeah, basically, it's a good service for being able to manage the deployment and management of the containers as well. So we can go through that. So what do we use containers for? those things listed there, so I'm not going to talk to all of them. But generally put, what we're trying to start to do with containers, I mean, anyone in here, which will be a very interesting question in a Microsoft sort of conference, but ever had experience with Solaris and Sun back in the day? So you probably know about zones. And so as the container part came around, we really noticed that some of this stuff had already been thought about before. I'm not going to say mainframe, but things like that are coming around again. But generally put as well, containers has really simplified the process and made sure that we can not just develop these things with a much smaller footprint, but they can move between the different service providers, between the different operating systems as well. Okay. So development patterns. So this is the really cool part about it as well. There were VMs, and so you can actually take your virtual machines and you can use things like Packer and Vagrant to spin up on a local machine to do development if you're looking at real servers. But that's a little bit more complex. So as the world has moved towards Docker, it's much simpler to be able to develop locally first. And that's a really powerful tool. So being able to actually develop an entire system and all the components that actually speak to each other on your laptop and then ship them into a place where you want to put it live into your SDLC and into production, it's an awesome capability. So I think we jump straight into that. We're going to show you that. So I'm going to walk through that today. A little bit of the story, and I'll switch to it. Am I 7?
Yeah.
All right. A little bit of the story like you're talking about. So when we talked to this customer, and I'll go through this in a second. When we spoke to this particular client as well, they actually said to us, we've got quite a few things that we're moving. One of them is our very super, super secret, very important app that we don't think can move, and it runs on a physical box right now. And we looked at it and I go, geez, what's this thing going to be? It was a Node.js app. that's crazy. And so let's get started a little bit. So I'm actually on a Mac. So I've noticed that I'm one of the 1% here at the conference that's actually using Macs. So hey, really easy to get Docker installed. The reason why I have this pager open, it really is quite straightforward now to get Docker Compose, and Docker Machine as well to simplify basically doing all of your Docker components locally. Easy to get going. You can probably also see here, I've got my little engine running in the background as well. But I'm going to jump straight into the command line so we can walk through some of this stuff. All right, first of all, another one as well. Does anyone tell me what I'm actually using here? Cool. Again, on a Mac, right? So everything that isn't Windows, that's what I'm going to be today. So what we look at here, as much as we've got the applications, when they came to us, really what they said, if you look at the application directory, it said really difficult, really hard. Now, obviously, clean this up and desensitize it, but this is their entire application. There was very little to it. It was basically them making updates to a website and a bulletin board that they kept pushing out. So in a similar sort of fashion, we've tried to replicate showing some of this here today. Again, some of you may have already seen some of the Docker side of things, but I'll talk to it. We have initially the Docker Compose file. We'll talk about it in a second, but just a Docker file. Now, some of these things, what we actually did with them and why I've left this at the simplicity level for now anyway, till we get some of the cool stuff, was just how easy it was to actually do it. So there's a lot around config management that used to be there sort of in the past, and with containers, there's still a bit of that for baking, but from simplicity purposes, we're looking at Docker Compose to get this stuff going. This really quickly just grabs that application that they gave us and said it was in the app directory. We go, cool, copy in app directory, run npm install, install express as well, and then expose port 8080 for the container, right? And then start it. It really is that straightforward for them. And when we first did this for the client as well, they were really, really surprised because the very next thing they did is, where can I go run that? And it was basically, you can go run that anywhere now. So they really did move away from that sort of idea of having to run this on a real machine somewhere. So in terms of the Docker Compose, it's keeping it in terms of ridiculously simple, right? It really is just exposing 8080 and bouncing that back to the container itself. The application is straightforward. It was an Express app. It different dependencies on some of the different NPM modules to be deployed. The reason why I'm showing you some of this as well is so is that we can actually get to doing some changes, and the changes we will be making. Funnily enough, the biggest part of their development was changing colors. And so in this presentation, that's what we'll be doing to show a change. I think, does everyone do that where they just said, oh, look at this, I changed something real and it was just a hex code color change. All right, so behind the scenes, looking at here, and the reason why I left the Docker Compose PS up there is, why does that come up very small? Sorry, guys. Cool. is just to show that there's nothing running. So really simply, once we've actually got those files in there as well, we are in a directory, we are using version control, we are able to do something as simple as Docker compose, and we're just going to build it. Okay, I haven't made any changes yet. But really, hopefully, as you can see, the way that Docker works as well is it builds it in the actual different stages for each of the machines as it goes through. So if we go, give me a second, if we go and actually change that code, and I am going to go change it, look at this, the color's going to change. Right, to that. Cool thing is, you know, changed it to white. Yep, I should have done that. Right. So we've made some changes. So now if we go and look at the build again, we're actually going to see that say, ah, cool, no, I've actually detected in that copy and moving of the files across that something has changed. And through that development process, the really cool thing is, just like the developer, again, I'm doing this on my machine. At no point here have I had to go and request the server. At no point here have I said, hey, I need to have some kind of, you know, thing spinning up over in a cloud anywhere. I'm doing this all locally myself with an internet connection. So that's the other part. You kind of need that. But yeah, once this runs and gets going, what I'll do next is I'll show you, and this shouldn't take very long, just a simple Docker compose up. So now that we've built it, new build, new revision, what we'll be able to do is just do an up. It'll tell me, hey, it's up and running. And we'll jump into localhost now. I think I might have already had this going, but I'm just going to switch to it anyway. And that was their super... The color at the top has made sure that it's that bit broken. We'll put it back in a second. But that was their super, super secret application I got running, right? So it's Docker image running. It's now a container running on my machine. So again, sorry, and moving through that quite quickly because we want to get to the fun stuff. But basically, that is just the initial way of being able to do the Docker compose and get an actual container up and going. The next phase, though, really, and we'll switch back to slides, is what we do with that. Cool. So enter some automation now. So now that they've got these changes going, they want to actually start playing with things. So what we're actually looking at is, what is automation? What are we trying to do here? Some of the stuff you see here, and I think is what we refer to as our vibrato technology tree. Go one step further. Not sure if anyone in the audience has actually played the game Civilization. No? Yeah, cool. Do you remember the technology tree? First you do this, then you get this, then you do this. Okay, so at Vibrato, we actually created one. The one you're looking at here as well has got the references to a few things like config management and deployment stuff and that sort of thing. But basically what we try to do is we say within an organization, you want to be able to go and build up all of these different capabilities bit by bit. And as you move through, it's basically like a traffic light report on where you've gotten to with your automation in the company. So one of the key ones is that we talk about the build pipeline over there in release management. So it's really cool to be able to go build these containers, but what we need to be able to do is find a way to automate deploying them. So the automation side of things improves a company's ability to be able to rapidly deploy, rapidly get testing out, and make sure that anything that breaks comes back to them quickly. So it's about speeding up that feedback loop. Okay, so how does it help when you're moving to the cloud? Clearly, as we're moving to the cloud as well, you first have to, that's what we were talking about, you first develop locally, and then you take what you're actually doing and you say, okay, I've got that on-premises. How can I get that going inside of the containers? And you can do that locally. And then once you've got that, it's pretty easy to then actually go and grab it and run it in Azure. And there's several different ways to be able to do that. Okay, so what does it look like? So we mentioned about some of these. So definitely, you know, Docker Swarm, Kubernetes, and DCOS. So again, now I actually want to go and put it somewhere, not just where I can see it on my laptop, but I kind of want to make sure that other people can see what I'm doing as well. So setting up Kubernetes is what I personally looked at doing. And that's what I'm going to take you through. So I've got a bit of a rehearsed run through, but we will make some changes as we go. Okay, so PC to Azure. I'll switch across. All right. I need a bit more. A lot of people using the new CLI. Yeah. Playing with it locally, yeah? Yep, cool. Right. So the really, the most difficult part in this was I really need to be able to go in and spin up a new Kubernetes cluster. So that took me ages, and by ages, it's that long. And that's literally how quick it was. So within about, I think it takes about 10 minutes to come back.
Yeah.
Yep, all the nodes and the cluster is actually set up and going. So very simply, again, using the CLI, looking at ACS, create with orchestrator type Kubernetes. You could put in Swarm. You can do whichever way you want to go there. Pointed at a resource group, which I'd created, which I think was Pete Dev at this point in time, and gave it a service name and prefix, as you can see there, in terms of Pete Azure Demo. That was really it. Once that's up and running, scroll through a little bit more, and I'll just come down here. Nope, I'll just go right back to the top. You'll see me doing... I've purposely done this as well, so you can see me doing a lot of what I do a lot on the console, which is a lot of constantly doing process listings just for the sake of typing PS and hitting enter, and also doing a lot of grep because I forget the last command I did about 100 times. So walking through it, once it's actually set up, then we actually install the Kubernetes CLI as well, so as that we can get ability to be able to run kubectl. So at this point here, you can see that I went and ran to kubectl get nodes, and what it's done behind the scenes is shown me that's already gone and spun up the nodes, which are basically where all these containers are going to start living. Now, you can even see me doing homebrew and basically doing brew install watch, and there's a reason for that as well. Once we actually spin it up, we want to go and push something out. So the very first thing you see here that I did was, again, even with the client as well, they said, okay, cool, how does this thing work? And you can see there straight away it is to run Nginx, right? So, and it's not Nginx, it's Nginx. And get the actual image down, which is basically the latest image of Nginx that's up there. So that goes and pulls it down from the registry and ran it straight away. And then what we have to do as well from the command line is say, can we please expose port 80 and load balance it as well. So the really cool thing that you can see, and we'll show you when we actually get to the proxy of Kubernetes as well in a second, is that you can dynamically jump in there, even straight from the actual YAML itself, and say, can we please update this and change it from like one kind of pod to four pods to 10 pods, and you can actually increase the scale of the amount of compute and containers that you're actually got inside of the cluster. All right, just go through the next part. So just by playing through the story as well, all my quick labs, there we go, all things. I'm going to jump down for a second into container area. So like I said, though, we've got that all running. I'll get this up as well and show you the proxy. Got that all running, and we're going to take a sneak peek. Unfortunately, when you look at this, because we need to have this ready to go, you will see something here. But basically, this is Kubernetes. Once you run a proxy, this is up and running in Azure and ready to go. There's a few things that have already been deployed here. We'll talk through them, and this is a little bit about what we're saying with the customer. But we just created that repository, and over here as well, what we can do is kill this. Watch me grepping. Or the push command. Whoops. Sweet. So now that I made those changes as well, what I'm able to do straight away is say I'd like to also push the latest version of the actual application I've got up into the repository that I've got. So I'm not sure how many of you have got it as well, but there's also the actual... I'll switch across so everyone can see it. Cool, the actual repository of the Docker images. So this is mine, very, very simple. There's the description of the Azure Demo Gov website one there. And that's basically what it's pushing to at the moment and where we're also pulling from. So that's cool. I've done it locally. And as I said, I went and actually spun up my environment locally, and now I want to push it here as well. So what we can do is do exactly that. Okay, so what I'm actually going to do here is go and actually create that same image on my cluster now, where I'm pulling down the image that I built locally, pushed up into the registry. I want to take that and say I want to deploy that into the cloud. And so that's what I'm actually doing here. So that's pretty much happened instantly, and we'll go back to the proxy and have a look at that in a second. But the other thing that we also want to do is make sure we expose the port so is that we can start seeing it all. And you can see here there's super secret, and it's doing some magic stuff. At the moment, it's running and available. Now, in a second, I'll just double-check this. We should be able to see the port. But the watch command is what I want to show you next. So while this is happening, what we can do is say, show me the services. Now, some of the different services that are there and running, we can do this again all from the command line, but doing a get service as well, we can start watching using the watch command to have a look at constantly running the get service to see when that external IP address, due to the fact that I said I wanted to actually expose it, has come up. So that's in pending state at the moment. It does take a little bit to come back. Now, a little bit more around it, and I'll just have to double check on this. Yeah. So that's basically just around that small sort of Node.js app that was there, but I'll switch back to the live slides for a second while that's happening. So the other thing was that our client was there and saying, hey, by the way, we're running Drupal. I don't know if anyone uses Drupal here. Yeah, cool, there's a few people. Not just that, but when we talk to them as well, it's obviously an open source product. It's been tested quite heavily out there. There's lots of people making modifications on it all the time. But not just this, they also came back to us and said, we've got 3 physical servers and we run Drupal and we have one box there and one of the machines that we actually run, and they do run a few VMs, is running 16 instances for developers. And they're like, oh, we're actually running out of, you know, out of compute and all that sort of stuff, so it would be really great if we had a different way of doing it. So that's why we walked them through containers. But it wasn't just Drupal. They turned around to us and they said, no, we've got Drupal, we've got WordPress, we have a few other different services that we're running in an open source space. So what we want to be able to do is take them and say, well, we can go and spin them all up as well. Now, that's actually ridiculously easy to do, and I'll switch back to this for a second as we look at that. Oops, almost to the end. That's up and going. So now that's finished. This is this one that's running. And as you see, we've been able to take it up. So what we will do, though, is look at the actual deployments. Oh, I need to run the proxy again, my bad. Great. Deployments. Yeah. So it is ridiculously easy to be able to say, I want to go the same way that we run the one where I was looking for mine and the way that we ran Nginx. It's so easy to be able to go and grab Drupal and spin them up as many times as you like. It's also able to get, obviously, you can see the Nginx one. You can even see the WordPress site. And those, obviously, they'll come up really quickly, and they're in a mode where they're ready for configuration. And then what's really cool as well, though, is that you've got the ability from the database perspective, they're able to dump those databases, and then you've got simple services like ClearDB and other stuff like that. In Azure, we're able to pick them up, import them in, and then point this front end back at those services. So they've got them up running pretty quickly. The other cool thing as well, and this I'll just show you what I was doing here, is that we can edit that YAML directly. Look at pods. One sec, spec. So direct in Kubernetes, what you notice just happened there as well, as I said, oh, when I first started it, I wanted one. I want 4 there now. It was actually as easy as just changing it there directly in the YAML from the proxy and running it. And all of a sudden now it's been able to spin itself up, and you'll see some of the load and memory usage start to climb as well. Now that's all really good. We got that all running. It's in Azure, and everyone's all nice and happy. It's like, yep, cool. Only everything I just did there and everything I just walked through was very manual. And again, back to the perspective that we were talking about before, the entire spin up of that cluster, whilst I didn't touch a GUI, it was still just command lines and typing things, and that's really not a cool way to do it. So that's why I turned around and said, hey, it'd be really good to be able to automate this and look at it from the infrastructure as code perspective, right? So then I handed over to Chris, and this is where Chris is going to say, yeah, cool, I'm not using Kubernetes anymore. So let's go through some of your tech. So. You ate?
Yeah, eat. So, we had our developer, Pete, go off and, on his own tangent, decide that he was going to use Kubernetes and
really build his containers. Just saying. And,
yep. but the great thing about Docker is it's transferable. So our standard platform is Docker Swarm and not Kubernetes. So what we're going to do is take what Pete's built in his Kubernetes environment and
put it in the bin? Or? No.
Okay. Yes. and bring it straight into a automatically provisioned Docker Swarm cluster that we're building up with Terraform.
So how many people actually used Terraform before? There was only a few. So there was not a single, yeah, you can put your hand up. That's one. Okay, sorry, I would have expected so many more people to look at it. Anyone heard of Terraform? cool. I'm still saying new words. This is great. Okay, so if you guys...
You've heard of HashiCorp.
Yeah, HashiCorp, yeah. No, I don't think that's even less. Okay, a few there. All right, so you probably would have played with, at some point in time, Packer or Vagrant. So the same people who bought you some of those automation tools, that's a group, Mitchell Hashimoto and the HashiCorp group. They've built these products, one of them being Terraform. So Terraform, do you want to actually explain Terraform a little bit itself?
Yeah, so Terraform is another way of defining infrastructure as code. Rather than using ARM templates for Azure or using CloudFormation for some other small cloud provider, even Google Cloud, on-premise vSphere, you can use the same language to define your infrastructure as code. And what it means is that a lot of knowledge that you've gained from working in one environment can be transferred sort of directly across. What do people think when they see Terraform first off is, oh, they only need to write things once and then they can deploy it everywhere. That's not the way it works. It's a common language, but you still get to... I think it's a benefit. You're not stuck to the lowest common denominator. You don't just get to deploy compute instances. You use the actual services that are honestly what provide value in using a cloud service. So we can go in and we can use Terraform's Azure Container Service Provider, which was just released a couple of days ago in Terraform. So another advantage of open source is if there's nothing there to do what you need to do, you can write and submit a pull request to HashiCorp yourself and get it in there yourself.
We were actually thought that we were going to have to compile it off one of the branches that was there, but yep, luckily they released it, and now we get to play with it today.
Yeah, so this snippet here is basically all we need to provision a Docker Swarm cluster on Azure. We're going to define...
Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to explain it from the beginning, how it pulls together?
We're going to define a few standard things, like our resource group and where we want to run it, number of master nodes that we want to run, username and password, well, SSH key to access our cluster, and profile that we're using for our agents. It's really that simple to be able to define in code, this is how we want our cluster to look. There's a few auxiliary things down here that are just going to open up an SSH tunnel through to that cluster so that we can interact directly with it with Docker. But that's about the extent of spinning up a cluster. And if we have a look at we can run a plan against that.
So I'll just
Terraform's going to...
So yeah, do you want to explain the Terraform plan?
Yeah, so Terraform is going to look at what we've currently got and go, what do I need to change to do this? So this one here is basically we're going to start a whole new environment.
I'll probably just explain it a little bit more as well. Only because when we saw the hands go up, no one's really seen the Terraform stuff. So one of the big things being is that this gets glued into a pipeline later on. And what's really important about that is that when you first go and deploy these things, you're going to eventually be playing with production. You're going to be releasing anything with Terraform stuff into production. So one thing you want to be able to do, so again, whilst we automate this, it is important to understand the change sets that we've got moving forward, right? So change requests and stuff like that. So what a plan file actually does initially is go through, as Chris was saying, so at this point as well, if it has nothing, it'll actually be saying, I'm going to go and create all the resources. So you see all the pluses down there as well. So it gives you that green list of things. In the same respect as well, if you're removing things, it'll show you the negatives, and it will also show you in a particular order it's going to run things as well. And that's pretty important to pick up on. So when you look at this, you're normally going to initially move these change sets in one way, shape, or form with continuous deployment into your non-prod environments, right? You can go and push them into production environments with continuous delivery as well, but initially we start with the non-prod ones. So by having the plan file there and getting to the practice of being able to do that, you actually also come out with a little bit of a test or a stop gate that you can show. So when it does get to production, you can actually say, cool, Look, can I just see exactly what you're about to do as that last bit? Someone gets cast their eye over it, they're like, all right, go forward. And eventually, once you build a bit more confidence in it, you can go straight through to running it. But it does create the plan first, regardless. And then, yeah, do you want to pick up from there?
Yeah, and then as it's as simple as applying that plan. Don't look at that bit. So what Terraform's going to do there, it's going to go out to call out to the standard Azure REST APIs and run through the same process that Pete would have run through with his CLI commands on the Azure side. That's going to take around 10 minutes, so I'm going to switch over to one that we prepared earlier. And show how we would do add Pete's containers to our new cluster service.
Just beforehand, are you running the Drupal one by default?
There is nothing running currently on this cluster. So you can see it's got no command, nothing there that it needs to run. So if I run a Terraform, and you'll see I'm typing TerraGrunt here. TerraGrunt is another bit of open source tooling that is a wrapper around Terraform to just handle storing some of the state files and things and providing locking, which is probably going to go away in a few weeks when the next version of Terraform is released and all this is built in. So I'm going to run a Terraform apply here.
That's a really cool thing with open source products is when you go to roll them out into your plan, 2 weeks later, it all changes again. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. It's definitely a positive thing, right? Like, roll forward.
So we can see there's nothing changed, nothing added. So what I'm going to do is, I'm not sure if my SSH tunnel is still running. It is. But see, I know what I'm doing, so I don't have to grip my bash history.
Sure.
We can the beauty of using Docker Swarm mode is you can use your standard Docker tooling to interact with it rather than having to install Kubernetes. they're both cool. It's all really cool tech. It was just that Pete and I made separate decisions without discussing what we were doing. So you get two examples.
You get the benefit of both of them.
So we can see we've got nothing running in our Docker cluster.
Terraform, yeah.
So I'm going to add myself a new file here. And we're going to add a new Terraform file. And I'm going to grab a snippet. And so this is how we define a container in Terraform. So we're just defining a variable up here that is our container name, image name. And what Terraform's going to do for us is it's going to use this concept called a data provider. So it's going to go out to the Docker Hub and it's going to pull back data about that image. And then it's also going to look at the hash of that image, and if it sees a change in that hash, it's going to know that it needs to pull down the new image for that. So not only do we have here our continuous deployment for our actual infrastructure, by running this apply again, it's going to be deploying the latest version of our container image as well. So it's going to spin up a container similar to the Kubernetes commands that Pete was running, expose some ports, and that's about it. So hopefully, because I haven't.
So the reason why this is so powerful Chris is running that is that you can probably imagine, while I'm typing everything manually and getting it all up and going, and it's very quick, and we want to start making sure that these solutions are robust. We want to be able to say, well, we again, in best principles and practices that we have within continuous integration deliveries, but we want to make sure that we can build it all from scratch again if we had to, right? So a very repeatable, manageable environment. And so now that we've actually got the spin-up of my service into this cluster, added into Terraform, if we wanted to, we could start from scratch, destroy everything, and push the button to build it up again. I think you show us doing that a bit later on as well.
Alrighty, no worries. So this is our new plan, and we can see here that all it's going to build out is our container and our container image resource. So let's apply this. Sorry?
So if you do plan, it shows you all the stuff that's going to change. Do you have to do that step, or is that...
You don't. So plan it, you can... So there's a couple of ways you can run it. So you can run a plan, and then you can output that plan, and then you can say apply with that plan. So if anything's changed between when you plan and when you apply, it won't apply those changes. So you've got that sort of control of not only having your... actual infrastructure controlled, you can have your transformations controlled as well. So the plan as I'm using it here is just showing what it's going to do.
So you could just do apply and it would do whatever
It needed to do, yep.
Yep.
So that's finished running and there we have it.
Thanks, Ben.
A very special government site.
Cool. Now... if possible, can you add a Drupal service?
Sure. Let's.
The reason why I want to show you this as well is that you might think to yourself, oh, but it's so much faster just to speed it up by doing the command because you'd have to write this. But the cool bit being, again, now we know this is really, really high level of automation and doing it this way. By showing you this, and this is why Chris is running through it now, we can actually give you the idea of being able to say, we can now also do that with Drupal, we can do this with any of the other sort of open source products, Nginx, that we want to deploy into that environment. And the sort of copy and paste and additional sort of Terraform files means that it's quite fast to make sure we've still got that automation. And why? It's because once we actually start doing this, we want to make sure, one of the things that we practice with our clients as well, is making sure that they don't actually go and do things manually anymore. So it's very, very, very important to make sure you go back to the source, change it there, and then push out from source as opposed to actually just going and touching things manually. That way you've always got a known state.
Let's go check Docker Hub for a Drupal image. I think it's just Drupal. Cool, we've got an official Drupal image. Up on port 80, but we're already using port 80, so let's...
Is that it?
I think that's it.
As you can tell, we're quite, meticulous about making sure that every time we do make changes in the code, we're constantly making commits. So I'm hoping even in the infrastructure space that everyone's getting very used to making sure you have high level of commits, high level of merge, and pull requests as well. Now let's see it break.
One of the great things about having all this as infrastructure as code is having a new environment to do your dev on in a production-esque environment as well is as simple as changing a variable to point your environment name or whatever. It means that you can work... There we go, Drupal running. You can work on a very production-esque system, and you may only need it for a couple of hours, and you could use even the same capacity that you have in your production environment for a couple of hours to test that everything works and be sure and safe that what you're doing is going to have the exact same impact on your production environment, because it's all only happened through code. There's been no humans in there messing around with stuff.
Like me.
Like Pete.
Yep. I'm banned. Last thing I'll get you to do as well, if it's possible, can you add just add an Nginx one? And then if possible as well, from Terraform, are you able to change the number of instances that are running? This wasn't rehearsed. So I'm actually trying to make him break something, but I think we're going to get through this.
Okay, so... Do you know what we're going to do?
Break something?
We're going to go to Terraform documentation.
Yeah. The other cool thing as well, again, what's really, 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 really important in the open source space is having good documentation. Again, the HashiCorp guys are really meticulous around this, right? So whilst they are changing quite rapidly all the time and adding new services, their documentation is like, you know, it's not like an afterfact. If anything, they've probably written the doco before, and they're doing it almost as, you know, test-driven development, where they're heading towards what needs to be there. So it's very, very powerful. Are you looking for the...
Quick question.
Yes.
I'm assuming that because you're adding into the same project, repo, that even if you're someone who's only actually... And I know you're doing good demo purposes, but if someone was to say, nuke your...
Yep.
Example, and you need just the government site, right? So you're making changes to that. Is that when you do an apply,
yep.
It's actually saying, for me to apply this, I still need to have that over there as well.
Yeah.
How this plan is actually configured. So if someone nukes it, it's going to put it back there.
It will put
it. You don't actually need it, but generally, I mean, you wouldn't deal with multiple different ones.
No.
Inside of it.
No.
Is that what it's saying? It's saying that even though I only need Drupal, because of the way this configuration is, it's actually saying I need that over there as well.
Yeah, and I think I completely understand what you're talking about just as you pull that together. Basically, when you look at that whole file, yeah, you've got everything there, right? And you're like, yeah, but what if someone's like, I don't need all those things, it's just one. Or if you want to work on one thing and you don't really care whether or not it's going to affect the others. Again, in this space, as well as everyone from infrastructure is moving into infrastructure as code, there's the ability to branch. So we don't say go and build all a whole heap of new, you know, code repositories. One of the things, at least the way that I practice that as well, is you basically branch across and you create branch saying, I'm going to be working on the government site, right? And I don't care about the other ones that are there. So that branch, you'll jump straight into your Terraform, just turn everything else off. You know what I mean? So you can, and that's if you want to use the full cluster. And then once you've done those branch and those changes, the cool thing about it, though, is that as you're going to want to merge back, you're going to also want to make sure that even anything you've done, because you are working with services that may have glued together, hasn't broken anything else with the other ones. So then the other cool thing is once you finish working on that, you turn the others on, make sure everything's all good, and then you actually put in a pull request that go, I'm pretty sure this is okay to come back to master. And then inside of that as well, don't forget that all these individual containers, if you are wanting to work in isolation, Terraform's definitely there when you're talking about that dev, you know, non-prod and prod environments doing that. But you come to your laptop, you actually pull down the image, particularly for just working with that one, you know, sort of Docker project that you're working on, that one sort of app. And that's where you would code against that, get the container working, and take it through the pipeline that way as well. So there's multiple different ways that you can tackle it. But again, if you didn't have it in the infrastructure as code, then you would potentially be tampering manually in someone's environment, and that's probably way more dangerous. Well, I know it's more dangerous. So, yeah. I hope that answers the question, but that's a... Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to run through this demo, and you're going to stop throwing things to me live on stage, I think.
That's cool.
So what we'd need to do here would be to... spin something up, I think, to sit in front of them.
You have a good load balancer stuff in front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Cool.
Great. Okay. It's back to me. All right. So, so this will actually, I think everyone will actually get some of their time. Sorry, switch back. Thanks, mate. will get some of their time back as well. So unfortunately, and it's because of an unfortunate thing, unfortunately we did, one of the things I didn't automate, and this is both bad automate, Pete, and why I'm post-technical, is that I was playing with, you know, adding and deleting things manually, and I destroyed my Jenkins setup. So that was, yeah, that was this morning. But I still want to take you guys through something. So again, we talk about, you know, having an actual pipeline. There isn't too much here to see because I was trying to create it last minute to pull it back in together, but that's not going to work. But there is actually the Cloud Bees, and there's also the Azure VM. Who uses Jenkins here at all? No? Have you used Jenkins? All right, cool. So as we, again, we're talking about containers, and what's really, really interesting about this is that we're now in a world where we're talking about infrastructure as code, and all those principles from development come across to infrastructure, including the pipelines that we try to run as well, right? So even with this sort of stuff, what was there and was going to add, and I'll just walk through it anyway, is that you can set up a pipeline in Jenkins to actually do those Docker builds. So when I was making those changes, what you're able to do is when you make a commit, then you obviously be able to look at that inside of Jenkins, and you're actually able to say, when I say a change in my VCS, in my version control system, any update to master, I want to go and execute this pipeline. That pipeline actually goes off, and there's the plugins that you can go and grab for Jenkins. There's the Azure VM plugin as well, which will allow you to actually go up and spin up a machine that will go and install Docker, go and create the entire container, image it all up, push it to a registry, and destroy that machine again. That's actually there, you can grab it. And the other one is CloudBees have got their, I can't remember what the plugin is called, I'm just going to see if I can find it. That's one thing I did go and do, so that's good. Yeah, Docker build and publish plugin. Oh, that's a little bit blurry. Sorry. Cool. Public plugin. So what that also allows to do as well is that you can jump into your repository where you do have Docker. You would have seen it in mine. You can actually have a Jenkins file in your repository so that with this plugin, it'll come along in that pipeline very simply. It says, the way that you need to do this is go to this registry, build the actual, you know, the Docker image, upload it, and have it available so as that you can then take that container and ship it everywhere. So there are a lot of the plugins there that that work really well to making you get that entire pipeline going, even for your infrastructure as code. Unfortunately, I did kill it, and it's, there's nothing I can actually do to bring that back right now. Cool.
The other tool, there we go. Yep. The other tool for your infrastructure as code, if you're deploying with Terraform, is HashiCorp have their enterprise suite, which is your fully managed CI/CD for your infrastructure. So instead of running Jenkins to deploy your Terraform files and manage your deployments of infrastructure, Terraform Enterprise will spin up containers for you on behalf of you and run through that and build it out.
So it's probably an interesting thing to say as well. So again, open source track, and you know it's a common thing there. But even in open source track, often the way that these companies do provide us the things in open source is that they have that proprietary enterprise version that they have on the back of it. You probably see from the diagram below, and just to talk through a little bit through that. So again, even as Chris was doing it, you were asking about the apply and the plan that you do there as well. The actual enterprise version gives you a GUI and a control center that actually allows you to say on the post, you know, commit or even these branch setups, you can actually control the way that it deploys into the different non-prod and prod environments, specifically for the Terraform and the infrastructure as code on the back of it. And then through those providers, you can actually push through all the other bits and pieces of containers that you want to push through as well. But it's definitely definitely worth checking out. And if anyone's interested, there'll be a little bit, you can come and talk to us afterwards, or you can hit us up on any of our Twitter handles about that stuff. On that, though, we are actually going to be finishing early. So I think we can probably switch back anyway to questions, but I'll talk about the stuff we're meant to talk about, which is to continue your learning here. The other thing as well, I think it's, please pass back your feedback. One of the things I wanted to say as well is that, there's a lot of discussion here around the Terraform side of things. There's a lot of discussion as well around some of the things that we could do with Terraform and the Azure platform. It's constantly growing. And so one of the things I'd really like to ask is if you do start checking it out and you are or do have some development kind of background, it'd be really great if you could look at potentially contributing to the open source projects that are there. That's it from us. And so I think we'll just pass it on to any questions. Yep.
Your Jenkins that you killed, Peplin, that's not in my container.
No, that's a good, very, really good question. It actually is a container running in there. Because I was doing the whole manual part. Chris was on his side with the automation, and that's probably a really good example as to why you probably want to make sure that you automate everything. I'm always deleting things. I really should be banned from touching anything.
Pretty much.
There's a thing called IAM in Azure, right? And I'm pretty much not allowed to touch anything anymore. Yeah. Any other ones? No? Cool. I know it's early, guys, but I think everyone gets a little bit of time back, so thank you so much.